Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we absolutely adore about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, they will tailor a quote to your exact needs, saving you money on your annual moped, scooter and bike insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode. Or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Also, and here's one for your diaries, folks, so listen carefully. On Friday the 22nd of November, we are going to be live on stage at Motorcycle Live at the NEC in Birmingham with our very special guest, Titch Cormack. If you can make it down, then please come and see us, as we'll be on stage between 11 and 11.30. That's Motorcycle Live at the NEC on Friday the 22nd. Of November.
No, I certainly can't wait for that, and I'm excited about today as well, Prutz, because every week we seem to smash it out of the park. Let's not give any credit to our producers. This is us. We are the draw. We bring the best guests, and I'm very excited because I'm going to fanboy a little bit. Today's guest, I think, is not only a top bloke, but I love it. All of his TV shows. We're lucky today.
We are indeed, and it really is our pleasure, isn't it? Because our special guest today is an architect, a TV presenter, a campaigner, and an author. A restoration man, no less. Most commonly seen in some truly amazing spaces. It is, of course, Mr. George Clark. So, George, welcome along. Thank you so much for coming on our, of course, motorcycle podcast. But it would be remiss not to ask you, given my background and your allegiance and passion for a certain part of the North East, Sunderland going great guns in the Championship, aren't they?
Yeah, they were flying. I mean, I'm pretty shocked, to be honest. I think most Sunderland fans are. Well, it was tricky, you know. We had 4 years in League One, which was miserable, to be honest with you. You know, after being in the Premiership and then dropping to the Championship and then straight down to League One in two seasons and then 4 years in League One. Genuinely, I'm just happy being back in the Championship. And I'm not just saying that, I really am. Championship football is brilliant. If we do go up to the Premiership this year, I'll be absolutely over the moon. But, you know, I've been a Sunderland fan since I was a kid. I shouldn't say this because all my mates will kill me back in Sunderland, but I'm half expecting us to lose every game from Christmas to May because that's what we're like. We go from one extreme to the other.
What I love about your part of the world, I'm out in Vegas at the moment, and yesterday I was chatting to a couple from the Northeast at a bus stop, and it's just lovely people. The Geordies, the Mackhams, you're all just, I don't know, you just seem to me to be positive, happy people and always a pleasure to talk to. When I was an athlete back in the day, Gateshead was the best British meeting on the calendar. Every year, we all loved it. Yeah, honestly, just because the fans were passionate and they were good people, they were knowledgeable, and it's a lovely part of the world to be, surely.
It's really kind of you to say that, mate. I mean, it's interesting because my girlfriend is kind of Swiss-Italian. She was brought up in Geneva, and she didn't really know that much outside of London, to be honest with you. I mean, it was interesting taking that to Liverpool for the first time because she genuinely thought she was in a different country. I was having to translate. But then when I took her to the Northeast, honestly, it was hilarious. Oh, my God, took her to Belfast for the weekend. I might as well have had, like, placards like Bob Dylan just translating on the hoof. But, you know, I take her to the Northeast and genuinely she loves it. She's like, the people are so kind, they're so friendly. And they are. You know, they're a lovely bunch of people and really passionate about their football. I mean, they love their sport. Generally, they're sport mad, but they're football crazy.
Getting back to the Northeast, George, I mean, I saw on Instagram recently you met up with Si King. Si King, of course, part of the Hairy Biker Gang, which has given his wonderful fallen colleague the most gorgeous send-off. We saw that, didn't we, in Dave, with so many people rocking up and biking out for him. And he continues, obviously, to really kind of cherish the memory of his dear friend. Was that a chance meeting between you and Si, or was that something that you'd organised?
No, I mean, we know each other fairly well, to be honest with you. We bump into each other at events. We used to actually share the same agency back in the day, long, long time ago. It was probably when I first started out, to be honest with you. So we've always been in touch and we'll meet up for a drink once in a while. I mean, you know how we all live busy lives. We only cross paths maybe once every 3 or 4 years, but when we do, it's adorable. And he's actually started a new food venue in Sunderland. He's just about to open it up, just to launch it. So there's loads of regeneration happening in the city, which is fantastic. There's probably more cranes in the sky in Sunderland than there's ever been in my lifetime, really. And there's a great development. It used to be some old Victorian stables that have been turned into kind of restaurants and hospitality. And there's a little auditorium and event spaces. And he's taken a food place there called Proper P-R-O-P-A, proper food. And he's doing literally pie and mash. Now, and all the stuff that you used to get in football stadiums in the 80s, basically, just slightly better. Like pies actually with meat in them, he's probably going to be doing. We didn't get them at Roger Park back in the day.
I must admit, we talk about him sometimes, Prots and I. He would be a lovely guest for us to have because, once again, a great guy, loves his bikes, and I'm assuming he'd be brilliant to have on it.
As soon as I finish today, I'm going to send him a text and tell him to come on. He is genuinely an adorable man. He's got a big heart and obviously misses Dave massively and obviously looking to kind of reinvent himself, which is, it's tough, you know, when you've been a double act like that. It's, you know, it's like Morgan and Wise, isn't it? Once one's gone, the other one struggles what to do, really. But he's a really, really, really top lad. No, you've got to get him on. You've got to get him on.
George, just to make sure that you feel as special as any other guest, we haven't just got you on to get Si King on. You do know that, don't you?
Yeah, you want Steve Cram. You want Steve Cram as well, dude. Like, you're probably mates with Crammy anyway. You're good mates with Crammy. He's not a biker, actually, Crammy. He just runs everywhere. He's like Forrest Gump.
George, come on, back to you. Enough Crammy and running chat. It's not a running podcast. You've got a book out, though, haven't you? Which I'd imagine would be a perfect Christmas present for any budding young architect. It's part of the brilliant Little Expert series entitled How to Build a Home. And it talks about the difference between house and home and explains design and construction and the use of space, something you've absolutely made your MO and have brought to life in so many brilliant, brilliant series. So when you do a book such as that, when you look at that type of passion of your life, is there a retrospective look at how you've got to where you've got from the lad in Sunderland that grew up in the northeast and has gone across the world?
Yeah, it's a really good question, actually, because it was written, so the book's written for like 6 to 9 year olds, so you know, quite a young age. And for my vocabulary, that's the perfect age for me to write for, to be honest. And it is a series of books, as you said. So James May's done one on cars. I think Deborah Meadham's done one on money. So it's part of the Little Expert series. Chris Packham's done one on animals. So for me to do one on how to build a home, was, to be honest, it was an absolute pleasure. It's been really well illustrated. And to write about architects and buildings and construction and materials and modern ways of living. A little bit of history in there as well for kids to be able to dip into that and understand how important the home is as a piece of architecture. And for me, you know, it doesn't matter whether you were brought up in a tiny flat on a council estate or a massive mansion. You've all got a very unique connection with home and what that means. It kind of crafts who you are, really. You know, it's like an extended member of the family, you know, and you never forget it. Like, even if you're not an architect, if I asked you to any question about the house that you were brought up in when you were a kid, you know, whether it was good or bad, you'd be able to really talk about it. You'd probably remember surfaces and wallpaper and what the carpet was like and even what it smelled like. Do you know what I mean? Like your mum's cooking or whatever, or your dad after he's been to the loo, whatever it might be. You know, but all those things really become like part of your life. Do you know what I mean? That piece of architecture is a really important thing. That's why, I mean, everything I do is about homes and housing now. I mean, when I was training, I was working on all sorts of projects all over the world. I used to work for some big architects in the UK. We were working on, you know, railway stations linking Hong Kong with China. I worked on the airport in South Korea. You know, I was working on skyscrapers. I was working on buildings all over the planet, really. Aquariums in America and stuff like that. Mad, crazy projects. But when I set up my own practice, I just started doing housing. And because I still think to this day, your home is the most important piece of architecture in your life, really. So to being able to write that book was a real privilege. So thanks for plugging it as well, mate.
Can I bring us onto bikes quickly, if I may, and ask? Because obviously you're so passionate about, you see, in my eyes, I assume you see art in everything and design. When you go for a bike in terms of whether it's to own or to ride, is it about the look of the bike or the comfort for you? Because surely if a bike looks like a bag of spanners, but it's comfortable, you're not going to go, oh, I want to be seen on that. Surely you're going to go for some Italian super bike, something that looks beautiful.
You know what, Ewan? It's actually a really, really good question because, you know, when you get, of course you know this, when you get people who are really passionate about particular brands of bikes, and it gets a bit tribal, doesn't it? It's like having a Formula One team. Like people always go, oh yeah, I'm a Ferrari team or I'm McLaren. I'm like, I've never been associated with a team. For me, it's like the drivers. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm a massive Lando Norris fan. Now, whether Lando was driving for McLaren or Ferrari wouldn't really bother me, to be honest with you. It's much more about the driver and the skills. And it's similar with bikes where bikers get like really obsessed about that particular type of bike. And, you know, they'll say, oh no, I'd never buy one of them. I'd always have one of them. And I'm like, To be honest with you, if it's got two wheels and it goes and it looks decent, I'll ride it. I just love bikes. You know, when I even when I had mopeds when I was a kid, and then when I got my first 125, which was a bag of spanners, you know, it wasn't such a bad looking bike. It was a little Honda. But for me, aesthetics is really, really important. You know, if you're going to, I don't know, it's like, you're not going to buy an ugly car just because it drives nicely, are you? I mean, you might, but I'd have to have a chat with you about it. You know, it'd be really weird. And and if there's like some bikes I look at and I'm like, oh, that's just ugly. That's just not me, that. I could ride it, but I wouldn't want to be seen to be on it. I'd make sure I had my visor down and it was tinted so no one knew it was me. So, I mean, to be honest, everything with me is about aesthetics, like genuinely. I mean, I was a brand ambassador for Triumph for a while. I rode a lot of their bikes and I just love the brand. But again, it had to be a beautiful bike for me to ride it. I've just customized one. I've just customized the Scrambler 1200. And really went to town on that. I mean, having a customised bike, I love that. That doesn't get more unique.
George, did you do that yourself? Because I know that with Triumphs, one of the huge kind of pushes with Triumphs in the last 10 years or so is that ability to customise it yourself, given how that scene's taken off with regards to kind of making scramblers and making dirt bikes and making cafe races. The catalogue now of being able to do it in your own garage is huge, isn't it? Is it something you did yourself or did you take it off to someone else?
Mate, if I did that, I'd make the bike really dangerous. I wouldn't trust myself to ride it if I did the work. To be honest, it was a time thing. I would have loved to have had the time to do it. I genuinely would have done. But I had a team that did it. And it was great. I mean, so Triumph called me up and they're like, so you want a 1200? What would the redesign be inspired by? And I was on holiday. And actually, do you know what? I might send you the pictures. Hang on, let me see. I might send you them so you can stick them up on there. Can you see that camera? Ewan, you can't see properly. You need it at a lower level, don't you?
Yeah, I can see it.
You've got your lens in a dodgy position looking at your crotch or something. I don't know where your lens is at, but...
No, I can see it. Yeah.
So that is it's a limited edition Leica camera, right? And it's called the Leica Ghost. They only made 150 of them, yeah? And I love my photography. I love taking pictures. And I was sitting on holiday with a camera and I looked at it and I thought, actually, why don't we just try and make the bike look like the Leica Ghost camera? So it's called the Triumph Ghost. Let me see if I can get a picture here. I'll send you these and then you can stick. Do you do a newsletter and stuff?
Well, I mean, you know about this more than we do, mate. So potentially off the back of this.
So like, there's the front. Can you see the, looking like that? I'll hold it down.
Oh, yeah.
So you can see
beautiful.
It.
Beautiful.
That's there. And then
that's
when
nice.
You look at the side of it, it's all kind of grey like the camera is. Let me just hold that up there for anyone watching.
Wow, hey.
And even like little tiny touches, like at the end of the Triumph. Let me put that in there. Can you see like on the tank, they put Ghost under MPH.
Yeah.
So it's the first ever Triumph Ghost motorbike. And it literally looks identical to my favourite camera. So that's how nerdy I am about aesthetics, Ewan.
George Clark is not going to own or ride an ugly bike. Let's be honest. Full stop. It had to be customised. It had to look wicked. I love that.
Yeah, George Clark's Ugly Spaces doesn't have the same ring to it, does it?
Do you know what, though? It's so funny you say it. So people come up to you and they go, but come on, mate, with all the projects you feature on that series, they can't all have been amazing. And I said, well, let's not call George Clark Shit Spaces, is it? Like, why would I have a not amazing project on a series called Amazing Spaces? Honestly, the cynicism.
Yeah. I mean, given how much it costs to put TV on nowadays as well, you're like, no, I mean, fundamentally, I would get in so much trouble for making something that looks terrible. You've just shown us those pictures of a gorgeous bike, and that's way down the road, isn't it? That's a customised build with the help of a huge manufacturer like Triumph. But let's go back to the other end. Where does it start? What's first bike territory? Is it an uncle? Is it a parent nudging you in that direction?
No, I mean, the first bike that I dreamt of having, I can't remember the make of it. I was about 7 or 8 years old. And there was a lad that lived two doors up for us called Stevie Nicholson. He still lives on the estate, actually. Really good friends with my mum. And Stevie was bike mad. And he had a garage. So next to our council house, there was a big row of garages. And he had the third garage in. And I used to just hang out in there all the time, 7, 8, 9 years old. And he was like doing all sorts of stuff with bikes. He was much older than me. And his mates would come over on bikes. And I mean, literally, I remember... saying for Christmas that I wanted a Mad Max outfit for Christmas when I was like 8. And Steve took a black motorbike helmet and like cut the visor so it looked like a kind of sawtooth. And I'd just wear it, even though I couldn't even ride. I was just like wearing it. And Steve, one of his mates wanted to sell this tiny, tiny, tiny little kid's bike. And I think they wanted 35 quid for it. And my dad got hold of it and pulled the accelerator and the bike just didn't actually move. And he went, I'm not fucking paying 35 quid for that. And so that was the bike that went. I probably shouldn't swear on your podcast, apologies. And so I never got that bike. And then basically I got kind of, a few of the lads had scramblers and that was all off-road stuff. This was before I had licenses, before we were on the roads. So we'd go on the fields and just throw 125s around basically and break chains and make a mess out of them. So that was my kind of first proper riding experience. My dad's best mate, I remember, had a Kawasaki. I've got pictures of me on that, actually. I used to just sit in his Kawasaki and pretend to ride it when I was a kid. But it's kind of mopeds and 125s when I first started riding. There wasn't much to it, really. Then I started doing a lot of off-road, KTMs, did a lot of KTM off-road stuff. At a more serious level, I went through, I did that kind of Moroccan off-road tour on KTMs. You've probably seen that advertised. There's a few companies that do it where I did that for 10 days and went through the Sahara. And then it just kind of stepped up from there. Just it was a kind of increment. I mean, I had loads of different bikes, loads of different bikes. My first proper serious bike, I would say, away from like messing around on 125, because I was a student for years. I mean, it was 7 years architecture. So when I was still a student until I was 24 in London. So I was in Newcastle first for my first degree, and then you have to work for a bit and go back and do your second degree and then work a bit more. And I was skinned. I was absolutely broke after 7 years at university. So, I just had pretty crappy 125s and very average 250s. And then my first proper bike, I think, was 2007, Ducati S2R 800. Love nice. That bike. And that's when my son was first born. So the shots of my son sitting on that bike, kind of like what I was doing when I was a kid back in the day. And then I've just jumped around. I've had all sorts. When we talk about like not falling in love with brands, but I did love my Ducatis. They were always like beautiful, beautiful looking bikes.
Yeah.
I've jumped around from Triumphs and everything. So yeah, so I've had a massive collection of bikes. Loads of crappy mopeds that got nicked all the time in London. I'll tell you what, if Bike Show want to give me some cheap insurance for my new bike, it's costing me a fortune to insure that, by the way. I nearly had a heart attack. I nearly had to take out a new mortgage on the house.
Take us back then. You've already listed some amazing bikes you've had, but take us back to that day when you pass your test, when you get that note and the driver says, I'm pleased to tell you, you have passed. For me, it was that freedom. That was all of a sudden, you know, I can go from the 125 and get whatever I want. How did you feel when you passed your test? Because I'm assuming, obviously, that's a great day because you could step up and get the bike of your dreams.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, when you ride a lot and you're doing a lot of off-road stuff and you're limited by power, it's like, it's a bit frustrating, really. And you've always wanted a bigger bike and actually just do longer distances on the open road and not have L plates on. You know, every time I had a moped, it was L plates. It's always an embarrassing look, isn't it? Especially when you're 6'3", going around on a little 50cc moped in London. It's not a great look. Do you know what? I mean, you say freedom, and I know that's a word that everybody uses about bikes. But on a really serious point, I just love... So I don't have my phone on when I'm on the bike. I don't have any mics. I've never had it. I've never had any of that stuff ever. For me, the joy of just getting on a bike and riding and switching off from the world, and it's just you and the bike and the road or the track or whatever it might be, I love it. I mean, you know what it's like in our jobs. It's busy, 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 and it's pretty relentless. And, you know, with mobile phones and social media and, you know, relentless accessibility, you don't get much chance to switch off sometimes. And I just love riding. I mean, honestly, if you put me on a little 250 Yamaha now and said, go off and ride for an hour, mate, I'd be happier than a pig in shit. I really would. I mean, obviously, I don't want to be back on a 50 or a 125. I bought my lads a 125, actually, and I had to pick it up. I've got two boys. I bought them a 125, and I had to pick it up from the garage. Oh, my God, that was an awful ride for 40-odd miles from the garage. I was like, every time I went down to low gears, the back end was kicking out and everything because I was so used to being on, like, well, 1200s is what I ride more than anything, 800s to 1200s. But, yeah, I mean, if you stuck me on a half-decent little 250, I'd be super happy, really. It's a great thing, isn't it? I mean, it is. I know we always, when you're a biker, you really wax lyrical about it. But when you really, really fall in love with bikes and you just get out there, because, you know, when I was younger, it was all about speed and chucking it around and being a bit being a bit daft, really. Now it doesn't even matter if I'm doing 40 mile an hour down a country road. I just love it.
It's such an amazing way to put it, George, because it, not that you ever take it for granted, but because you do it that much and you love it that much, it becomes such second nature, doesn't it? So get your gear on, quick check of the weather. Am I going to be all right? Sod it, let's go. You're on. And quite rightly, phone's off. So I use mine sometimes with the sat-navy type stuff if I'm heading somewhere, but that's something you can't answer. And you are, it's all your kind of motor skills, literally, isn't it? You've got both arms, both legs, head in the game, eyes in the game. Whether you get the odd day, and I've mentioned it on here before, where it seems like everyone in a car's gunning for you, someone's coming for you. But you get, mostly because we love it so much, you get that kind of wonderful plateau where bike and you are working so gloriously well together that you do start noticing the smell of something or the trees or, oh, look at that silly sod. Oh, no, he's gone back again. Didn't even see me. Quick wave and you'd be on them. And how time passes and the passage of time in such short kind of little bursts. Nowadays it's called mindfulness. You can call it centering. You can call it being in flow. But it's just, if you love it and you're passionate, it just seems so natural once you're sat on there, doesn't it?
Yeah, one thing that you've just touched on, really, again, without getting too heavy about it, it's being connected with your surroundings. You don't get that in a car. And even if you're in a car with the roof down, it doesn't feel the same. I mean, that's still a beautiful experience. But when you're just on a bike and you're looking around and you're looking up and you're looking across and you're kind of, you're feeling everything a bit more. And I mean, nearly everywhere I go, I try and get a bike. You know, like when I was filming in New Zealand and the South Island, and they wanted to film me on a bike. I think we just put a message out on social media and some bloke was like, yeah, I'll meet you at the hotel tonight. You can have my bike. What time do you get in? And he dropped his bike off for us and we used it for the day. I mean, honestly, we didn't even rent it. And that community is great. Someone to be that generous is amazing. But just being on the bike, and I remember my sound man, he'd never really been on a bike before. And I said, look, stick a lid on and just jump on the back. And he's like, no. I said, put your kit down and just get on. And we drove down this beautiful mountain pass, just the 20, 25 minutes. And he got off and he was like, that's one of the greatest things I've ever done. And because he just wasn't a biker. He just hadn't experienced it ever before. And he was like, now I get it. Now I really get it. And God, I remember I was filming in Japan for Amazing Spaces. And I was, you know, they always try and get me in a vehicle of some sort. Like when I was in Texas, they put me in a Mustang and all that lot. And I was like, I want a Honda Fireblade. That's the one bike I want to ride. I know it's a cliche. I know it's obvious, but I don't care. I want a Fireblade. I tell you what, riding around the streets of Tokyo on a Honda Fireblade. And then when they said, right, we'll go down to Mount Fuji. Do you want us to put the bike on the trailer? I went, no effing way. I'm riding there. There's no way on earth that's going on the back of a trailer. And just to ride down and go around Mount Fuji on a Honda, I don't think I'll ever forget that for the rest of my days.
George, it's really interesting because earlier in the podcast, you talked fondly about your dad not buying you the bike, but it was really interesting to hear that you bought your lad's bikes already and they're on the 125s. Because I often have this argument with my missus. She wants to, our kids are too young, but she wants to get them a trampoline or let them go on horses. I'm like, it's far too dangerous. And she's like, but you want them to ride motorbikes. I'm like, they are definitely riding motorbikes when my boys are old enough. And it's important for me because you mentioned community and the fact that good people, you know, of course you get bad people as well, but nice people seem to ride bikes as well. How important was it for you to get your lads into it, or were they always going to be a lover of bikes because of you?
Yeah, you've talked about it in the most beautiful way. The tragic thing is it didn't last long because the mother clamped down on it and said, no way. Yeah, so the same's happened. The same's happened. Yeah, they haven't got it. I sold it. I think that bike probably had about not even 300 miles on the clock before I flogged it back to the garage I bought it from. Devastating. Yeah, and you were really hoping I was going to tell a wonderful story about my boys being out on the open road. Nah, they're at university, mate, and they're going around on push bikes.
I was hoping you'd say father-son weekends up in the northeast, beautiful rides with the boys.
No. Sorry, mate, I've just picked on your chips.
No, multi-generational gorgeous story about passing on one thing to the other.
Honestly, I should have just lied, but I couldn't bring myself to do it, mate. You painted such a lovely picture with the question, and my answer was devastating.
The point being, George, that Ewan only ever makes that point on this podcast, which I know his wife doesn't listen to, so he never gets to say it in front of her. He only says it on here.
Yeah, this is it.
Anyway, I've got a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping, folks. Hope you're having as good a time as we are. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. Over to you, Mr. Vegas.
Well, I was thinking, we often ask about, you know, what is it so special? Why is it so special to ride a bike? What is it for you that does it? But I think we've covered that, really. I quite like asking people about the love of cars as well, because you mentioned earlier about beautiful cars and having the roof down. It's also a beautiful feeling. But nothing quite is as good as going on a bike. So if you had your dream bike and your dream car in the garage and the sun was out, I'm assuming I know the answer. You're going to take the bike out every time.
I was going to say the bike, yeah. For me, taking the car out is a collective thing, you know, having your girlfriend in the car or your wife in the car or having my sons in the car or whatever it might be, that's a collective experience. The bike for me is, it can still be a shared experience if the boys come on the bike. My girlfriend loves being on the back of the bike. She absolutely loves it. I mean, you know, she's Italian. She's been mad about lads with mopeds for years. You know what I mean? And then she's stuck with me. She's stuck with a lad from Sunderland now after all those glamorous Italians. And I just think the solo time of being on a bike is really, really special. And yeah, I mean, I like my cars, but I've never been obsessed by cars. I've always enjoyed them, but I've always been obsessed by bikes because of that individual experience. And do you know what? I actually had my dream car quite a long time ago. I've always been an Aston Martin fan, and I bought an Aston Martin DB9. The reason why I got the Aston Martin DB9 is designed with a mate of mine called Ian Callum. Ian Callum is one of the co-designers on it. Brilliant Scottish car designer, Ian. He's a lovely, lovely man. He's got his own company now called Callum Designs, where he customises cars. And so I bought the DB9, and I had it for a couple of years, and then I was done. Do you know what I mean? It's like after James Bond and all that cliched stuff. I'm basically a walking cliche, as you can tell. And after Bond, I was like, I really want an Aston Martin. And I got it, and I loved it. I really, really loved it. And then after 2 years, I was like, nah, I'm done. And, you know, now I drive an all right car, but it's nothing flashy. It's not a statement. Where I don't know, bikes for me, I've always been obsessed by. And not that I want them to be statements, but I'm much more connected to my bikes than I am my cars.
Yeah, I think you'll be singing to a lot of the converted on this particular podcast, mate. So given you mentioned before about a helmet with a tinted visor, and obviously if you pull up somewhere out on your bike, all the gear on, helmet comes off, maybe stop for a cup of tea or whatever in what would be a place where a lot of bikers kind of go, is there a double take when George Clark gets off his bike and there's a kind of, oh, hello? And it does that help in... It's a great icebreaker, isn't it? We know you're famous, but you're on a bike. Can we come and chat? Do you get a lot of that?
Yeah. I mean, everyone's really nice. Do you know? And everyone's lovely. I mean, I think people are just over the moon that I'm part of the bike community when other bikers come over. Have you ever been to Matlock Bath in Derbyshire?
I've heard so much about it, but I've never been on a bike, no.
I've been filming there a fair bit recently. We've got... I'm doing three different series at the minute, but on two different series, I'm filming a Matlock and Matlock Bath. So I've been there quite a bit. Yeah, it got to the stage where I couldn't really walk down the street in Matlock Bath. I've never seen so many bikes in my life. I mean, that fish and chip shop in Matlock Bath must be making £1 million a week, because all the bikers just pull up there for fish and chips. But yeah, there's a lot of that. But I think it's much more that people see me as being part of the bike community. And yeah, all right, I'm on the telly and all that lock, but they just love to talk about bikes more than anything. They're always lovely, but yeah, there's always, yeah, you know, there's about a bit of double take, but it'd be better for any biker. I mean, any biker who was on telly, or anyone that's even relatively well known. I mean, I'm Z-rate, but if there's someone even relatively well known, you're going to get spotted.
But the thing with that, George, and the way you talk, and it's when we kind of bash our heads together about who to get on, and everyone that we've had on has been absolutely wonderful and lived up to all of our expectations, you included. It's that wonderful ability, and this is kind of blowing a bit of smoke up your ass with regards to watching your television programs and being a man on the telly. Chatting to you now is exactly the same. That's a real gift. And I know that in different variations of what broadcasting is, we've all met divas, we've all met people that you go, ooh, not sure about that. But what you've got and how you come across is exactly the same. So there's no element of people seeing you thinking, I can't go and talk to him. I think most people, if the helmet came off, would go, well, he seems like a nice bloke. I'm straight over there. That's something to be proud of.
Yeah, I mean, well, I've got to thank my mum and dad for that because it's just me at the end of the day. Do you know, it's interesting you say it. So for me, I'm an architect on telly. I don't see myself as being, I mean, I don't even like the C word, celebrity. If you're going to call me the C word, call me the proper one. Just don't call it. Just.
Hey, don't mate, worry.
That'll be the best compliment ever. I'll be over the room with that. I can't even say the word because you're going to lose like all your listeners. I'll put the beep in, right? You're either a good beep or a bad beep. And if you're a good beep, then that's fine with me. I don't mind that. You know, that's it.
But I think riding a bike, though, George, I think riding a bike automatically makes you, oh, he's an all right beep. Do you know what I mean? Because it normalises. No, but it does. It normalises you because all of a sudden you take your helmet off and people might go, oh, I didn't realise he was into bikes. Oh, he's sound then. He must be all right.
But that's what you're right. I think that's what I'm saying. It's about being part of the bike community rather than being the bloke off the telly. And I think that's the stronger thing. But even away from the bike end, I don't like the word celebrity. That, for me, it's a trade, right? My granddad always said, get a job and be a grafter. And I'm a grafter. I just graft. And whether it's on telly or whether it's in architectural practice or whatever it might be, I'm a grafter. You know, I teach architecture, and I've taught at universities and blah, 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 blah. I do lectures around it, I write about it and all that lot. For me, I'm just doing architecture on telly. And I don't see myself as being, I genuinely don't see myself as being a celeb. Like, I don't. And that's probably why I'm the way I am.
Going off the celebrity shout there, George, but and this is aimed squarely at you both, only because I'm dead jealous, but you'll take everything that comes with being a celebrity, like nice free bikes. That's the undercurrent of what you're saying.
Oh, you mean like cheap insurance, you mean? Just to get that in again.
Bikes, you're on it. Don't worry, they're already working away.
I'll do jingles for it. I'll do anything. Anything.
We will sort that for you.
I paid for my Triumph, by the way. Let's just get that out there. And I paid for the customization. I bloody did. What a favour that was to Triumph. When they called me up, I thought, oh, this is going to be great. This free bike, free everything. No. No, I paid for the lot. I've not had a free bike in ages. And actually, I genuinely haven't.
We've seen you placed an order. Do you want to customise it? What? How does that work?
And how to pay it. That's it.
You're on telly too much. You're that nice bleep off the telly earning too much money. That's why, mate.
Brilliant.
We love to ask this next question, and unfortunately, we will be running out of time soon. But genuinely, I'd love to either go to the pub for a lemonade with you or a bag of chips. But we love this question. I'm going to put you in a beautiful scenario now. You can paint the picture. I would like to know your dream ride, location, which bike you are going on. Are you listening to music? And if you are, what music would you listen to? I think you wouldn't, but if you were. And would you have a pillion with you, a passenger? Who would you have with you alongside, or would you be on your own? So dream ride, where would it be? Anywhere in the world. Dream bike. You can't say a Fireblade in Japan. We've had that. And who would you be with? Who would be your mate on the bike?
Oh, God, that's a really good one. Because if I leave people out, they're going to get really upset.
Go on your own then. You can go on your own if you want. Go on your own. It's fine.
Do you know what? Some of this might not sound as glamorous as some people might think. Like, you know, they probably think I'm going to pick, I don't know, Route 1 in California or something like that, which obviously would be amazing. I've ridden that, which was amazing. Do you know where I'm super happy is riding a motorbike in Northumberland, right? I love Northumberland. I love the Lake District as well, but if I had to really plumb for somewhere, I'm so connected with Northumberland. It's where I used to go a lot when I was a kid. The coastline's absolutely stunning. You go to Bamborough and Alnwick and Lindisfarne and all those places. The coast roads up there are absolutely stunning. I think I would just do Northumberland. I think I'll be on my 1200. I think I'll be on my bike. I think I'll be on my Ghost. I love it. It's a big frame. It's a high bike. It's really comfortable. I wouldn't really want to do a road like that on a racing bike, to be honest. So being on the 1200 Scrambler, I'd love passengers. I'm going to just say my best mate, Dean from Sunderland, my best mate in the world. I love that boy. And he's absolutely shit scared of motorbikes. So it'd be great entertainment for me. It'd be great entertainment. I mean, he'd literally be screaming and crying on the back. So he'd ruin it. I mean, basically, once I shut him up, it'd be a nice driving experience.
What's lovely about your answer there, though, is it's almost your life already. You're on your bike, you're in your part of the world, and you're with your type of people, your mate. And that's lovely, because you can make that dream fantasy ride come true. It's a reality for you.
Yeah, I mean, the reality would be him screaming and crying on the back, so it wouldn't be that great. But, you know...
and calling you a bleep, yeah.
Exactly. I just like the simple things in life. Sometimes the simple things that mean a lot to you are the most beautiful things, really. And I think, obviously there's parts of the world that I'd probably love to ride, but I don't know. It's amazing when you've got a connection with a place, I think. Obviously, when you're riding through a place that you don't know, that's a journey of discovery. But when you're riding through a place that you really do know, and it's part of your DNA, and then it's kind of part of you as well, really.
Well, that's that familiarity that can be the most warmest of feelings, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I really hope that Dean, my mate, doesn't listen to this podcast, because he's going to be hassling me for months going, when are you coming up on the bike? I heard you said it on that podcast. You bleep.
Right. And on that bleepy bombshell, unfortunately, but this week's full chat powered by Bike Show. They'll tailor a quote to your exact needs, my friend, and help you save money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
Oh, honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us, the amazing George Clark.
No, I've absolutely loved it. It's an absolute pleasure. And do you know what? Let's do that lemonade and fish and chips at some point, mate. I'd really love that. Really love it.
Let's do it.
You've been amazing, mate. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so that you never miss an episode or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify.
We've absolutely loved it. Thank you to everyone who's been joining and listening to us. Until next time, see you later.